roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goat. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Racing Sportsbook, listening to another episode of the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George, and with me as always is the devious and dastardly Goes, Ari's co-host, and Goes, we have a special guest. Young Mike Bond is in studio, straight from Norfolk, Virginia, to Sin City. The man never stops. What's up, guys? How you doing?
What up?
I'm great, man. Good to have
you. All right. Hey, I like having Mike in studio because we're going to be down in a couple suds here. So if there's a little slurring, don't tell our bosses. We just wanted to have a good time to cap off a good fight week. We're going to recap the UFC Norfolk card. Tell you all about it, you know, all the results, all the major plots, subplots that came out of that. Mike, again, was in Norfolk, so we'll see if he has any backstage news nuggets, along with the news nuggets that have come out this past weekend, which there's not many of, honestly. The meat and potatoes of the show is going to be the UFC Norfolk card. And don't forget, Fight Week has kind of officially started here in Vegas. UFC 248 is on Sunday, and so we'll get a couple quick thoughts. Saturday. We'll get a couple quick thoughts on that event that's coming up before we get on out of here. So buckle up, folks, and it's another MMA Junkie Radio Show ready to go.
In 2008, a former D1 football star pulled off a robbery so daring and so strange that it went viral worldwide. It was a perfect crime story. There was just one problem. It wasn't the real story of what happened. The Sneak is a new, serialized true crime podcast from For the Win and USA Today Sports. You can subscribe now on Apple Podcasts or get it anywhere you get podcasts on Tuesday, January 14th.
All right, today is Sunday, folks. Give me a little bit of a break. I meant to say Saturday. UFC 248 is on Saturday. But for right now, we're going to worry about the UFC Norfolk card. Guys, what a disappointment. We should be talking right now about either Davison Figueiredo or Joseph Benavidez being the world champion at 125 pounds, the UFC flyweights division. They don't really call it the world champ, but you guys know what I mean. And instead, we're going to talk about just a sequence of events starting with the weigh-in on Friday and then the fight that took place on Saturday. Mike, I believe you were one of the first ones to start putting it out there. Davison Figueiredo came in at 127.5 pounds, 2.5 over the limit, and he didn't really even try, right, to the second attempt.
Yeah, no, he didn't. Joseph Benavidez was the first person on the scale. He came in right at 9 a.m. local time, ready to go, 124.5, and you're like, okay, this is great so far. Then we actually had a pretty rapid succession of fighters coming in, and we were basically through the whole card within like 40 minutes or so, and then you're like, oh, there's two people left. One of them is Davison Figueiredo. You're starting to just get that little concern, but I hate when people kind of freak out in the weigh-in window, and they're like, oh, you know, like, you get those 2 hours until you show up. Like, I don't care if you show up at 9:01 or 10:50, like, you are still within your right to weigh in any time there. So I think we kind of make too much of it, but you're starting to get a little concerned, and he comes in with about 20 minutes remaining and gets on the scale, and they read out 127.5, and you're like, wow, did this really
Have there
just
been
happen?
Any rumors throughout fight week at all? Any rumblings, you know, in the hotel or anything?
No,
like that?
I hadn't heard anything. I mean, we saw him on media day on Thursday when he did his scrum. He looked fine. I saw him around the hotel and stuff. There was nothing really.
No lightheadedness or nothing like that, huh?
No issues that really stood out to me, and I guess what happened was he, you know, the cut was going relatively well, and apparently he started to cramp up when he was around 3 pounds out, and I guess from the UFC's perspective, the doctors, they started having some conversations, and really they came to a decision point. It's like, is this guy going to have to keep putting himself through this? And then if he pushes himself so hard and he has to be taken to the hospital or something, then you have no fight at all. So it was like, okay, this guy's going to miss weight, but are we going to try to preserve the fight here? So we still have a main event. Joseph Benavidez can fight for the title. He can still fight. So I think that's ultimately the choice that was made. But he was given an extra hour to try to make the weight. He did not use any of it. They came in.
Because he reached that point. So now I get it. It wasn't for lack of just, I quit, you know, like he broke or anything like that. He actually, the body was shutting down.
That's what it seems like. Okay. Yeah, that's the story. I did not get that story from a UFC official or from a doctor or anything. This is the story that Waleed Ishmael, his manager, provided to us. Allegedly what he said, I don't really know how accurate Waleed's translations are. This has kind of been a storyline coming out of this event as well. So that was what he put out to us, saying that the cramping started to happen and they just made that decision that they want to make the fight still happen instead of him really trying to, you know, kill himself to the point where he was going to have to be taken to the hospital or something and we'd lose the fight.
And do they have the same rule as the women at 115 pounds? A few weeks ago, I think we lost the fight. I think it was the Gadelha fight because Grasso didn't weigh in within 3 pounds. Otherwise, he could have went forward with that. Was that the same case that would have applied here with Joseph at 124.5, 0.5 of a pound less than what he needed to be? And the other kid, Davison Figueiredo, coming in at 127.5, they dodged, you know, that bullet, I guess. But did you hear anything like?
I did not. I think that might be a more Nevada-specific rule. I think New York has something similar as well, because I remember the fight a few years ago between Donald Cerrone and Kelvin Gastelum that was supposed to happen when Gastelum came in like 8 pounds overweight. And, you know, it depends on the weight class too. Like, I think if you're talking about the straw weights, it's 3 rounds. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
As you said there. So, yeah, I didn't hear any word on that, but Joe seemingly was unfazed about anything, and we can get into that interview I had with him after the fact if we want. But it seemed like it was a body shutting down situation for Davison, and then we kind of went forward from there.
Okay. I did see that interview that you did, and he even said, Joseph said he ate breakfast that morning, so he was very light. He came in prepared.
I think Joe could fight at 115 if that
really
was a thing. Yeah.
And folks, that does exist. Goes, you and I called fights at 115 in Japan for World Series of Fighting Global. In fact, Jared Brooks, who I think was getting vocal on social media and at one time was a UFC flyweight, he's actually the number one strawweight in the world, isn't he?
Yeah, no. I don't know that we – I mean, that's what's so unfortunate about this whole situation is everybody just kind of had 125s back when it seemed like it was going to go away.
Oh, I know.
And then for something like this to kind of kick in at – when the spotlight is as big as it could possibly be for them, that really, really sucks. So, I mean, 115 maybe one day will happen, but not anytime
soon.
Well,
who knows? Who knows if 125 will happen?
I know.
I'll ask Mike a little bit more about that. But so now we're on Friday. They accept the fight. 30% is what's decided that Davison Figueiredo has got to give to Joseph Benavidez. The fight goes on with Davison Figueiredo not being eligible to win the world, or sorry, I keep calling it the UFC flyweight title. However, Joseph Benavidez was going to be able to win the vacant title. And they go through with it. It seems like everybody's okay with it. I'm sure the UFC officials are displeased at this point, but publicly it just seems like everything's just flowing along till we get to Saturday. Right, Mike? Did I miss anything there, or was there anything behind the scenes that...
No, I think you pretty much hit it, yeah.
All right, so we get to Saturday. Did he have to weigh a certain limit? Did Joseph put any criteria on him? Or
no, he just said that
he can't rehydrate to a certain weight time. Or
no,
something.
He just wanted the 30% because he felt that, you know, 3 pounds, he had kind of, during his experience, seen that typically when someone is, you know, if it's 3 pounds or more or something like that, then you could ask for 30% instead of the 20%. He ultimately ended up getting that. So
I heard you can ask for whatever you want.
You could, technically.
Yeah, you can ask for
sure.
50 if you want. Like, whatever the commission rule is. Let's say Virginia is 20. Okay, cool. But you can go ahead above that. And you can also ask for the other fighter to come in 24 hours later at no more than, we'll say, 12 pounds.
I think that's important.
Yeah. So do I, because come fight night, wow, what a size difference. And I mean, I've seen both these guys fight a ton of times, especially Joseph. But I couldn't believe it. Not only did it look like a bantamweight versus a flyweight, it almost looked like a light featherweight versus a flyweight.
Have you ever seen the stress on a fighter. Like, the second they make weight, they usually all have either a scream or an exhale or something. The fact that you could put your fighter, your opponent, in that situation overnight where they can't have that release until they do that second weigh-in, I think that's great. I would do that every time. I'd make
so
sure.
So would I, man. Yeah. You know, that's a serious thing, folks.
And it may be Joseph's fault. You know, his chillness and his level-headedness may be almost to his detriment in that situation, because as you mentioned in that interview we did in his hotel room shortly after the weigh-ins, he was calm as a bob. Yeah, like, he did not, wasn't worried about a thing. He's like, you know, this guy, he wasn't gonna win the title anyways, etc., etc. Like, I don't care about him missing. Like, I'm gonna go in there, do my thing. And he was just almost maybe a little too lax about it, and maybe he should have pushed harder for some of those things you just mentioned.
Yeah, man. The fight starts on, you know, as the main event, with only one fighter eligible to win the title. And the first round, wow, Davison Figueroa, I mean, you know, he looks great. He's obviously, they're rehydrated. You don't happen to know their rehydration weights, do you?
No, they didn't share that with that commission. That commission,
that's something that would always happen across the board.
I'd love to see that too. I'd be looking at Figueroa, though. You couldn't imagine. He looked like he was 150 pounds in there.
Yeah, I was going to guess 145. 150 sounds about right, too. Benavidez is probably no more than 140, probably 135,
probably low 130s. Yeah,
jeez,
something like that.
I mean, Benavidez hit him a couple times, and Benavidez is coming off a KO, guys. Yeah. He's coming off a KO over Formiga. If I'm not mistaken, Formiga's the only guy to give Figueroa loss, right? So, I mean, I know the A plus B doesn't equal C stuff, but either way, I know Benavidez has some power, but yet when he's tagging Figueroa, Figueroa doesn't look like he's just like batting away a fly.
Yeah,
you know
that's
what I mean?
What was so scary early on. He sucked. He took his best punch.
He took
his
best punch.
And he had this look like he just didn't care anymore.
Yeah, he had a confident look like, that's all you got, you know, that type of thing. But Joseph still would catch him from time to time. Figueroa was really, really catching Joseph a couple times, you know, because Joseph's more of a windmiller type of guy rather than a straight punch guy. But either way, how about the first part of the fight where he almost got armbarred? That was one hell of a scramble. The fight really got started. It was exciting. The only thing I was thinking was, damn it, this could be the exclamation fight that the UFC flyweight division needed to restart itself. A title fight, which I knew it wasn't going to be, but still a great fight that maybe finished with one guy being the champ, being, you know, being Benavidez. It started off on the floor. That was exciting. They, you know, they were hitting each other. But god damn, man, we get to the very end and that's exactly not what didn't happen. But folks, at one point their heads collide. Benavidez seemed to take the worst of it, and a cut opened up, blood just spilled out. And during that time when Benavidez kind of was backed up, he wipes at his eye and Figueroa lands a big right hand. I mean, like, it looked like it cracked the nose and, you know, right above the lip. Just puts Benavidez down on the floor. A couple follow-ups. That's it, man. It's a wrap. I could not believe it. It reminded me in 2013 when I was in Sacramento and Joseph had fought Demetrius for the second time. Mm-hmm. And the first time had gone to a split decision, I believe, in your hometown of Toronto.
Yep.
Second time, people kept thinking, you know, okay, Benavidez might get this one. He's in Sacramento. Everything's built up perfectly for him. And he got laid out, man. And, oh, man, that sucked to see it, because just like everybody's been saying across Twitter, you can't find a nicer guy than Joseph Benavidez. It kind of breaks your heart to see that happen to him.
Yeah, he's an A-plus character in this game, one of the nicest guys. I mean, just look, him and Megan are just such a great part of our sport. Their relationship and everything's so nice. Like, I personally can't be thankful enough for what they did for me during that week. Megan Olivi gave me a great and very rare interview where she was on the other side of the mic talking about what Saturday was going to be like for her. I couldn't imagine that was probably her worst fear coming true, what she saw there. But, you know, then she set up that interview with Joe after the weigh-ins and stuff for me, and yeah, just such great people. And, you know, I know we're supposed to be unbiased or whatever as media, but it's hard when you're around these people as often as we were. Of course, you guys share a hometown here in Las Vegas with Joe as well. You see him at the gym all the time when you're going around doing your off guards and stuff. So, yeah, it's like, it's just hard not to form some sort of personal aspect. It's not that I was, you know, rooting for him to win. I picked him to win because I thought he was going to win.
Yeah.
But actually seeing when the fight unfolded, I think you laid it out pretty well. Like, I was sitting there cage side and Joe was landing some good shots and Davison didn't seem like he was affected by the power at all. And then it started to get real scary. And
sometimes the three or four punch combos he would kind of clip him a little bit, and it looked like a couple of those kind of was hurting Figueredo a little bit. And at the same time, we know that Figueredo, in his lone loss, showed that he's a little bit susceptible to that cardio issue.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
It would have been very
so I think it was laying out nicely for Joe because, again, that round, I just finished saying a little while ago, he almost got armbarred. But didn't the judges still give him the round? Because he came back, I think, on
strength of effective striking. Right? I think one.
Only
yeah,
two?
Yeah, I think
okay.
two. I can look it up right now. But, yeah, it was a it was going to be tough going, I think, either way. Like, maybe Davison would have slowed down, but I think Joe would have had to be really, really on his P's and Q's for those
right,
third, fourth,
exactly.
fifth round. Like, I couldn't – like, he wasn't really having much success with the takedowns, with the scrambles and
stuff. I was
just
about to say that.
It
as much as he was starting to put a chink in the armor of Figueredo's cardio, Figueredo goes, how many times did he stop Joseph's takedown very, very nicely? You know what I mean? Bossed him around, like, you know, didn't even touch the ground, basically, via a takedown attempt.
I think, unfortunately, for Joseph Benavidez and for the division, really, in general, that was a night that was just filled with what-ifs, right?
Oh, too
what if
many of them.
What if Figueredo makes weight, right? He becomes a champion. What if Joseph wins the title? What if the referee catches the headbutt and gives them that break?
I know.
Does that stop the finish from coming? There was just so many what ifs that night that it just really sucked the way it went down.
So all three, just to clarify, all three judges
all
did
three
give
did?
The first round.
Yeah,
to Benavidez.
And so remember the other guy made an attempt to the finish. In fact, I mean, I was even wondering if Benavidez's elbow was okay because that armbar was
scramble.
Deep, and he spun out of it, you know, and was able to secure a single and get out of it. Both guys back to their feet. I'm telling you, that fight was really, really fun and exciting. Except for the part of Benavidez losing, which, like Mike already said, hey, look, yeah, all right, we're a little bit more on the side of Team Benavidez. Not that we were openly cheering or anything like that, but we just know the guy. He's been around for a long time. I mean, I think he's going on his 15th year of fighting through WEC and UFC. So, you know, you can't help but when it comes to those two fighters, one guy that's based in Brazil and knows little English, I don't even think I've met him. Versus Benavidez, who's co-hosted. Sorry, guys. Yeah, it sucked, man. It sucked to see that guy go through it. I saw it in 2013. That was his last title shot. Now it happens again. I think I saw Mike tweet that he's like one of five or six that have lost three times.
Yeah, one of seven to have, yeah, go 0-3 in title
3
fights.
In title fights. In the UFC, because remember, he also lost to Cruz in WEC. So that guy, and guys, he's no joke, man. Benavidez, look at the skins on his wall. I just mentioned Formiga. You know, Formiga could be one of the guys that fights for a title at some point, and Joe's beaten that guy. In fact, he's beaten him twice.
Finished him twice.
It's just a matchup thing. But, Goz, you said it. It's too many what ifs. What if Figueredo does go all the way to 125? What does he put his body through? Would he be as stout as he was, you know, on the following day? No, he shut it down early. We don't know what happened behind the scenes. Fighters tell me every pound towards the very end is like 30 minutes of torture in the sauna or however your method is of losing weight. And Figueredo didn't do any of that. He shut it down early. And again, safety is paramount. If the guy's cramping up, then yeah, we want the weight cut to stop at that very moment. There's no sense in pushing forward with it. Still a colossal fuck up on his end because he walks away with no title. Yet again, Mike at Mike Bond MMA. If you weren't following him this weekend, you're an idiot. Because you also hit on something that shocked me. And I don't even know if you know this one, Goz. He didn't even get his Reebok money. He only got $5,000 of the $30,000 he's supposed to get. I guess that's a new thing, Mike?
No, it's so there was a precedent there with Yoel Romero. Same thing happened when he missed weight for the Luke Rockhold
fight. I'm not
in
favor of that.
Well, I mean, it's the way it goes, right? Like
he already gets penalized for bonus.
Sure. Well,
right?
To think about the money he could have lost.
Not champ.
That fight arguably probably would have won fight of the night if all was legit. And personally, I thought it should have gone anyways, and they should have given Joseph Benavidez all $100,000. But that's a whole other thing. But the potential $50,000 there. And with this, yeah, the Reebok money or the promotional guidelines compliance pay.
I don't like that one.
But so
all you got to do is make weight, though.
So how it works here,
yeah,
and this is the description I was given by the UFC when I asked about this. Basically, and again, there is precedent for it. There's the tiers, right? There's the 1-3 fights tier, the 4-5 fights tier, the 5-10, the 11-15, the 16-20, then the 21+, and then the title challenger, which is $30,000, which they both got, and then the champions pay, which is $40,000. So he was not competing in a championship fight. So like technically for him, he's not on that title challenger tier anymore. So he drops back down to what it would be as a regular fight. And this was his
okay, so it's not
UFC
a penalty
fight.
As in no, you didn't make weight, so we're going to...
No, it's got because it. You are not it. On that tier any longer. You're not in the title fight tier. You
and he
down.
Lost 30% to Joe.
And he probably lost
that. He's not eligible for that bonus. And isn't the rule for the next two fights too or something like that? Or is that only a few guys that have gotten fucked? Like I thought I had Quinta told us that goes.
For bonuses?
Like, when you miss weight, yeah, sometimes you're not eligible for like two or three of them.
Two shows, yeah. I was going to say, it's so, like two or three shows.
Yeah, I know Ally Quinta said something like that. You know, it is Al. He does say a lot of things, yeah. So maybe take it with a grain of salt. But that's something before giving a real answer, I'd probably want to look into more. But I feel like you would look back and you'd see some of these people who have missed weight, and they probably have got bonuses a few fights.
No belt. And then how about if we want to keep going? If he's champ, he gets pay-per-views on the next fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know what
gets,
I mean?
He gets probably a bump in pay as well. He gets 40K for his first title defense on the Reebok promotional guidelines compliance pay.
Right.
Like there's just
is this about $100,000 to $200,000 just right there from what we named mistake?
Probably.
Yep.
Wow.
Let me ask you this. What was your guys' take on just his emotions after the fight? Because he didn't seem like a guy that lost all the things that
he
lost.
I think if he was listening
to
this episode,
he overdid it a little bit.
That's about the time he starts blowing up. 24 hours later, he's starting to hear us three talk about it. He's like, what a minute, 100,000, 200,000? Somebody on his team's getting fired. Well, I mean, he's got to realize it was him, but still, maybe a nutritionist or something. You saw what Joanna did.
I don't even think he has a nutritionist. That's the thing.
He's old school, huh?
I asked Waleed during the scrum, and this is, again, where it's so hard to read into Davison because – you know, I don't speak Portuguese. Guilherme Cruz of MMA Fighting put out after the Octagon interview, he wrote a story being like, this is what Davison actually said in the post-fight thing. And there was, you know, some parallels to what Waleed said on the broadcast, but there were some things he left out completely. And we did a 17-minute scrum backstage with him after the fact. And talking to one of the reporters from Globo who was there, he said he's like, it was better than in the Octagon, but there was a lot of stuff he just like straight up
so Valley's kind of cleaning it up or just
I think he's
just being a man
his,
or
I think
an
he's,
interpreter
I think he's doing him a massive disservice, and this has been an issue. Valide is, you know, a big part of MMA history, especially in Brazil. He's done a lot for that market, jungle fights, all these things that can go on. He is a extremely charismatic personality in our sport, but he is not doing Davison any favors by not accurately representing what he said. And we said, I talked about this with John Morgan, our colleague, coming into the fight week. I said, we're going to go there and we're going to speak with him on media day. We need to tell the UFC they need a different translator. And they ended up doing that on the media day. They brought another guy who, according to one of the Brazilian reporters, wasn't all that much better. And Valide did find his way into the room as well during the scrum and like was kind of chattering some things in and saying some things here and there. So it's just a really weird dynamic of what's going on there. And it just makes it really hard to know Davison's true emotions and what he's like, you know, accurately saying here. Just the language, there's a language barrier with the U.S. audience is one, and then second, you have this translator who's not even doing him any favors and sharing what he's actually saying.
You have Alex Davis who does that for his fighters as well, but
yeah,
he doesn't get that.
But he's the official translator.
Alex was
for,
critical of him today on Twitter. I saw him. He was going.
Yeah, those two have
a
history. A
little bit.
And another thing I've heard behind the scenes is that Valide is just ruthless with the athletes in terms of I don't know, man, you know, like pimp status. I don't know how much of that money, you know, makes it to their athletes, who knows, but right. that's all stuff that I've heard behind the scenes. And to be fair, I've never looked at these contracts, asked these athletes anything, but I've heard it so many times over the past 15 years. So like Mike says, this guy's been in the sport since the NHB days, that I feel like I have to at least bring that up. I'd love to have Valide in studio one day and point blank ask him that, these rumors, you know, that's the way he is, you know, cutthroat manager. But anyway, all right. I did catch when Brett Okamoto was talking to Valide, when he asked Davison some question, and I'm going to go and try and get it in time for tomorrow, spinning back, like maybe you guys can discuss it goes. But I remember catching something that kind of, you know, raised the little red flag. As Brett is asking his question, Valide is kind of telling him something along the lines of, like, don't say anything. Real quick. He just gets it off real quick. So then Valide translates, and then Figueiredo, I think, said what he needed to say. So almost like he's trained him a little bit, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Who knows? But, wow, what a costly mistake all the way around. Now, Mike, tell me something. If that division's going to go, right? This isn't – I know that there's probably a percentage, 10 maybe, or 5, or hopefully 0.001, that the division won't continue on.
Yeah. I think there's definitely a chance. I mean, I don't know, because you're in this weird situation. I had heard I will not say exactly from who, but it seemed – on the night of the fight, in the immediate aftermath, there was some powerful UFC executives who had brought up the potential of a rematch, of maybe doing an immediate rematch.
Those two?
Yeah, between Joe and Davison. So that's potentially out there. That's,
because going back to the headbutt,
yeah,
if the timing's right and a referee takes a look and sees that Joseph's concussed, because that cut, they weren't able to get him cleaned up by the time they were announcing the winner.
Yeah, no, he was leaking for a bit there.
They may have been able to call it a no contest, right?
Yeah, it's tough to say. God, I wouldn't put my faith in anything. We had some weird scorecards on the card. We had, of course, if we want to get into it, the Megamed Ankalaev Young Kulaba stoppage. That was its whole other thing. Like, it's been a rough few weeks on the referee and judging front in our sport here. Going back to, you know, of course, the John Jones Dominic Reyes fight, all that kind of stuff, Felder Hooker, etc.
Main events just can't go off without.
It's true. It's been a crazy stretch here, but yeah, to get back to your original question, I think if they can make that work. Potentially, but you look at the other guys out there, like who's really screaming to see Davidson Figueiredo and Askar Askarov or like something like that. You know, it's like there's talented guys out there, but I think we're kind of back to the place. Maybe Henry Cejudo does consider coming back down. You know, he's making claims he's going to return to flyweight on Twitter, but you can't really put too much solidarity into anything Henry Cejudo says these days.
I go, relinquish means he has nothing to do with it, right? There wasn't one of those where the belt comes back to the guy that vacated.
No, they had said immediately after it was declared Davison was not going to be making weight for this fight that if he wins, the belt will remain vacant. So I think if I had to make a guess, I don't think there's going to be a long-term future here. Maybe they try to run back this title fight, but I don't know how confident I am that Davidson can even make 125. Even going back to his previous UFC fights, he's been 125.5 or 126. He has never made 125 on the nose. He's never made 124.5.
Remember Lineker? Same thing happened to him?
Exactly. So Waleed did say during the post-fight scrum that I asked, like, next time this happened, I asked him point blank. He's never made 125. What would you do differently? And he's like, nothing really. We might get a nutritionist. He doesn't have a nutritionist. I'm like, God, how do you go into a world championship fight and not have a nutritionist? It's just bogus. But, yeah, I think – so that's a whole issue they have to figure out, too. You could very potentially do this over and run into the exact same problem again. So do you even want to encounter that? I could see – them running out the flyweight fights that are already on the schedule, already on the books. We got one coming up in a couple weeks between Formiga and Brandon Moreno, and then it could probably come to a point that we were at before TJ Dillashaw and Henry Cejudo, where they basically say, you know, we'll let these fights run, we'll maybe offer some guys that have fights left on their contract, but other than that, you can either move to 135 or we'll let you go.
Well, I honestly don't blame them at this point. I think I can't blame them for that.
Yeah, if they're gonna shut it down, like, now is
this
the,
is perfect
this
chance.
Is the time they can do it. There's nothing holding them back from doing it. This thing has been a mess from day one. This division, you know, the draw, the miscalculated Demetrius Johnson versus Ian McCall draw, you know, not being able to get DJ over.
Remember McCall was goofing off to the camera,
yeah,
for a split second there.
Yeah, that when he is on his back and the postured up mount and stuff, back mount. It's just hasn't gone smoothly.
I thought Cejudo revived it, and it had a chance, and then he gets injured. Then he has to vacate.
I mean, can you imagine if TJ Dillashaw had won that fight and then popped
after?
God. Like, there's just so many things.
On life support, man.
Yeah, so, like, I think they'll probably honor the fights they have signed to these guys, the ones that are already on the books, and then they'll make their ultimate decision.
But this fight was exciting, right, guys?
And that's the problem.
It was good.
So
it was a great
between
fight.
Between that fight, and I remember Marino and Kaikara France, I enjoyed that one. Like, the ones that have taken place in the last, like, I'll say the last 10 of the last 12 have been to my liking. I just don't understand.
They don't have the bodies is the problem. So you can have a great main event at flyweight, but it's not like welterweight where, a week later, right, or even a month later, the next one comes around and it starts to build up what you're waiting for, some kind of
but
story.
But 35 is not that
they
much
just,
bigger.
They go away for
only
so long.
10 more pounds. What's happening here? You know, like, I think what it was, guys, is Demetrius just strangled it by the throat, the division, for like the last 5-7 years, however long his run was. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of like vanilla a little bit, so dominant. And, you know, like I said, I think Cejudo was able to bring it back. I still think it has hope. If they run it back, I'm not opposed to it. But, yeah, like, what guarantees do we have with Figueiredo? Like you just pointed out, he's never actually made 125. And then you got a team that just sounds sloppy over there. It's almost like the team – it's almost like they blackjack players, but they don't know what to do with an 11 against a 6. You know what I mean? Like, they're not maximizing their opportunities with their guy. And, honestly, Figueiredo's a stud, man.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is, like, if he has to go up to 135, he gives off the impression that he doesn't even care. And if you look at his body, I don't even think he should. He looks like he fits in perfect at 135. He looked gigantic.
Well, like I mentioned Lineker before, I think he rattled off 4 straight before he settled into, you know, losing to some of the top guys. But if you guys have been able to go up, I mean, Cejudo, look what he did. Mm-hmm. His timing was right, though. You know, he didn't have to go through the gauntlet. Wow. I mean, we could talk about this division forever, but – those are the fights that are coming up. Formiga versus Brandon Moreno. I thought I saw one other one. Doesn't Pantoja? No, Pantoja just beat Schnell,
yep,
right?
Yep.
So he's got a right to it a little bit, because even though he lost to Figueiredo also lost to Formiga. So everybody's kind of beating everybody in a way. It wouldn't be too crazy to find out, look, who's healthy. Let's just run it. I was even thinking outside the box, hey, let's have an 8-man tournament. But, you know, the UFC is not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly hope this isn't the end of it, though. Yeah. Did they say anything about the headbutt? And is that the reason they would run it back? Is because if the referee interjects, because it's in the accidental, right?
Yeah. No one from the UFC said anything, but we did ask Davison/Valid at the thing, and he claimed that it wasn't the headbutt that split him open. It was the elbow just before, which is like, come on, bro. It's like, stop it. So, again, I just don't know what to make of Davison Figueiredo, because I don't know anything about what this dude actually thinks, because I don't know what words are being spoken from him, what's being jumbled up, what's half-translated, what's, like, all these things. So it's really tough. I would love to sit down and talk to that dude with a very healthy, independent translator.
What did Alex Davis say, by the way?
I think it basically was just a conversation that started up on Twitter, I think, with Guillerme Cruz tweeting that story, being like, this is what he actually said, and then some other people chiming in, being like, this is a problem. Alex chimed in, just people kind of all saying that Waleed Ishmael is a horrific translator, and he should not be put in this position, especially on such a prominent
stage. And that's a kind
stage.
Word, actually. I'd love to see Alex Davis and Waleed ride an elevator, goes like 60 floors.
You'd need at least that. At least 60 floors.
All right, look, there was some people that I'm excited about. That Spike Carlisle guy.
He's a
Grant
character.
Dawson. You know, there's a few guys out there that you can tell right away, whether it's their debut or they're just the way they flow, that they're going to do something. But I want to concentrate on women's featherweight. The top two outside of the champion fought and won. Felicia Spencer defeated Zara Farn dos Santos. And Megan Anderson defeated Norma Dumont Viana. Then they pitched it to Amanda Nunes, who kind of punted back to the UFC and said, whoever you guys want is fine. I would think Spencer makes sense, because we don't even have to go back a year when she beat Megan Anderson.
In like
3
minutes.
She's lost since then. I get it. But she lost to Cyborg. But she did beat Megan Anderson. Mike, do you think she's the front runner at this point? Anything behind the scenes there?
I think she has to be, just given all those things. I wrote this in my takeaways column, and I'm not trying to do this to sound negative at all or anything like that. I think the reality of what we're going to see here, especially it seems like they're going to want this title fight to co-headline the UFC 250 card with
Brazil.
Yeah, in Brazil with Cejudo and Aldo. Amanda Nunes wants to fight on that card at 145. And I assume they will probably speak to both Megan and Felicia and negotiate with both of them. And I would say the person who will get the fight will probably be the person who takes the cheapest deal from the UFC.
Oh, wow. Wow.
If we're just being honest, that's a situation that's happened before. Someone could negotiate themselves out of the fight. I know Megan is represented by Paradigm, who is very bold behind their clients and tries to get the best deal. I mean, we almost didn't get this Israel Adesanya Yoel Romero fight coming up because Izzy was, they were not budging on the deal UFC wanted to give them. So it's the same people who rep. I don't think they're just going to let Megan walk in there for something, you know, some cheap deal. And I think she kind of perpetuated that herself. She did not seem like she was going crazy over this title fight when we spoke to her post-fight. She actually mentioned that she would be down to fight Jermaine Durandamy. She'd like to have her come back up to 145 and do fight.
No, you know, like a enough of the division. If we're going to get rid of a division, don't get rid of flyweights. Get rid of this one.
Well, it's funny because really, like, that situation of just saying, yeah, you know what I'll have next, like, it's not as dangerous as if you did that, say, at lightweight or welterweight, where one little screw up and now you're back like a year having to wait because of rematches and all that. And that division, it doesn't matter. You know, it's just like there's not that many bodies. So I think Spencer is the one that should get it, but
I agree.
Do either one of them really have anything for Amanda?
This isn't the time to play high stakes poker, because if you beat Amanda, you get the pay-per-views. And more than likely, they're not going to make you headline. They'll probably put you on a card that hopefully has Connor or some other beast where you can reap the benefits of that.
But
ask Tyrone Woodley about headlining or being on the same card as Connor, and you know how he benefits.
Yeah, no, there's good payment there. But who's to say if Amanda were to lose? I think there would be money in a rematch or something. But
she's also got 135 to 10 to.
For sure. And I think really the only reason that 145 is still kicking around post-Cyborg is Amanda just wants this title defense. She wants to go in there and say, I'm the only champion who had two belts at the same time and defended them both, you know, back and forth simultaneously like that. And then I think she just wants to cross that off her resume, and then everything goes out the window. Who knows if they keep it around? Who knows if she wants to keep
fighting at that weight class? And I'm not hating on these ladies. I would love for all of them to go to PFL and be part of 155, not have to put their bodies through, you know, those additional 10 pounds and just enjoy that. But there's just not enough women at 145 pounds to sustain a division.
Yeah.
Especially when the champ has double duty. And all these champs, I've had it up to here. That's about a foot over my head. With this whole, you know, they don't defend both belts. Enough of that. They don't defend both belts. So that's why I don't really like to see these champ things. Look at Ryan Bader. He's barely getting around a light heavyweight. You know how long it's been, guys?
2 years.
I think he's going on 3, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it might be 2. Ridiculous. You know, look at what Cejudo did. You know, he held it up for like 6 months. Then he made the decision. It just sucks. I don't mind them going for it, but as soon as you win, you get 30 days, do the media tours, and then you let one go, and then that's that. Anyway, all right. I think we all agree. Felicia Spencer next. If it's Megan, then it's Megan.
And I do think
none of us are too worried about what happens there. I'm not.
There is value in both of us. Like, say, I think we'd all consider Amanda. She'd be a massive betting favorite in either of those fights. But Felicia or Megan winning would be good for the UFC. If they could get another Canadian champion, no bias here, but in Felicia, that would be big for that market. If they could get another Australian champion in Megan, that would be huge for
Oceania's
that market,
Oceania's scoring
too.
Big, though, man.
So there's some things going on
there. They
already
got a champion. I think Canada would stand to gain more, right?
Yeah, but, like, you know, have her and Volkanovski on a card together or something. Like, there's upside there.
Is Spencer really, like, marketable in Canada?
No, I don't think anyone knows who she is.
That's what I'm saying, so.
Honestly. But I think you throw her, like, Canadians are the type that they'll rally around that. You put, if she wins that belt, and people, of course, if she were to beat Amanda Nunes, I think the recognition
That'd
would
be
come
huge.
Pretty quick for her. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I think the UFC could do a good job marketing her, or however they want to do it, to make it happen. But yeah, it's these are all major what ifs. I don't imagine it would be a really big uphill climb for either of those ladies to dethrone Amanda.
Folks, if you go to MMAJunkie.com, you can go to results and you can see the results of the fights just to finish the main card. And then you can search for prelims on your own. Magomed Ankalaev defeated Ion Kotaloba, and Grant
kind
Dawson
of.
Defeated Derek Minner. 7,098 souls were in attendance at the Chartway Arena, Norfolk, Virginia. Total gate was 402,958. The bonuses went to Fight of the Night, Kyler Phillips versus Gabriel Silva. Performance of the Night, Megan Anderson and Jordan Griffin. Anything else, guys, on this card?
No, it's just I just can't get over the fact that 2020.
Well,
just
actually, there's one more thing. Go ahead.
Every main event just about has had some.
The McGregor one's the only one that's
happen.
Been smooth, right?
Yeah, nah, yeah, I mean, but there was a lot of crazy fallout from that as well.
Ankalaev, we should bring that up. We'll go a few minutes long if we have to. But Ankalaev versus Jan Kataloba. Look, man, the referees, I try and go to bat for them because I think they have an incredibly difficult job out there. They don't even have the luxury. Today I was watching Manchester United, and there was a questionable call that actually benefited us. And that's somebody who's already in a studio with all kinds of different camera angles, who between him and the referee, they take the time to discuss. And even then, the pundits were saying, no, they got it wrong. Here's the letter of the law, blah, blah, blah. These referees have to make split decisions in the middle of a fight, you know, that's happening really, really quick. I mean, it's hand-to-hand combat that's taking place. I thought it was McDonald, right? What's his name?
Kevin McDonald.
McDonald. Yep. I thought his positioning was great from the time that Ankalaev first rocked Kataloba a little bit. Watch him. He did all the mechanics that John McCarthy's always told us about. I'm more concerned, he says, about the guy that's hurt. And he just kept following them as those guys circled, and he was watching Kataloba. He was watching him. He just observing him. Ankalaev throws kicks and punches and whatever else. Not all of them were landing, but Kutuloba's just giving the feedback of, I'm wobbled. You know what I mean?
He's playing possum, according to him.
Yeah, you know.
Which I don't know about that one. But
possum's more like when you kind of retreat and kind of cover up. I'm thinking of Scott Smith. Remember back in the day?
Yeah.
Well, you see it a lot in boxing because you can go off of the rope.
Exactly. You kind of cover up, and then all of a sudden you wind one up. And in fact, I think he won one or two fights. Check out Scott Smith, folks, middleweight back in the day.
Well, he was just hurt really bad. But, yeah.
Yeah, he was.
He went against Pete Sell as an all-time classic.
Exactly.
Was great.
But this guy he looked like he was a little bit wobbly legs, and then, you know, the eyes. And on one of them, he actually turned his head right towards Kevin McDonald, and he just had this glazed look. And I think that's why McDonald, who is already trailing him, already observing him, he's already thinking, hey, this fight has the potential to be stopped. That's why he jumped in, folks, because the data that he was getting from Kataloba on those prior shots was one of somebody that was rocked. Now, it's easy to say, yeah, once the fight was stopped and he reacted and he showed that he was okay, yeah. Don't go shit on a guy who may have just got it wrong. Of course, I think he should have let it go a little bit more, but I don't think he also was careless is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Again, I think you said it right. He was the one in the cage. He was the one with the closest view of the fighter's eyes and stuff. But it's just at some point, like, these guys know what they're signing
right
up for.
They're
going in there like, I think we're getting a little soft with the stoppages in some ways. Like that, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that would have been a abomination of a stoppage. And how often, you know, we see the standing stoppages occasionally, but it's usually when a guy is up against the fence, covering up, getting teed off or something. I can't recall many times where a guy has jumped in for a standing stoppage like that in the center of the cage, open space.
Right.
It does not happen very
but
often.
But his mechanics
like that
were good. His observation of Kataloba, it's not like he missed anything.
Sure.
He just saw something there and he just went in too quickly. But I don't think he was careless. I just think he made a mistake because he jumped in too quickly.
He did. And I think you're right there. And it's just a tough one. Again, he was the one in there. But like I said, these guys know what they're signing up for. This is an important fight for these guys.
I just feel terrible because they get crucified, man. It's like, all right, lead him out. Come on, put him on the cross. Crucify him. You know?
Yeah.
And that's like, no, nah, man.
But it would be great. And that's the
Premier
thing
League guy
need,
doesn't
though
get
we need more accountability too. If
yeah
Kevin McDonald came out and say like they have in the NBA or something,
like
where they have a brutal stoppage or not stoppage, but like a brutal miscall or something like that,
yeah,
they will allow. And of course, they have like an NBA Writers Association who work with the refs and et cetera, but they have a pool reporter who can go speak to the referee, one guy who represents all the media. They'll come in with 3-4 questions. They'll get to ask the referees. They'll give their answers and go on. But now there's no accountability. There's no Kevin McDonald. We get a few guys, you know, Big John back in the day, Mark Goddard comes out and, you know, speaks for himself a lot now, but we don't know what Kevin McDonald was thinking. Maybe he comes out and he has a perfectly legitimate, understandable, reasonable explanation of why he stopped that fight, and then so be it. You can move forward, is what it is. But we have no idea. We're all just left here to speculate on what he may or may have not have saw, what we saw from cage side, what you saw on the TV broadcast. We don't know, and it's just left to this big controversy and big debate.
We all react the way we do because there's so much on the line for these fighters. One of those situations puts you back sometimes depending on your division, it could put you back as far as maybe 2 years.
Your win bonus, right back a possible there. Cut. Yeah, depending on what your situation is, the dominoes
that,
fall.
That bad boy was shaping up to be fight of the night. Like, that was a crazy 38 seconds we had there. So
it sure was. I don't know. I guess they can run it back. Whatever. All right, listen. We'll be right back with a news nugget. So we really aren't going to take up too much more time in your life, folks. I'm going to shoot you straight. We should have just ended the show, but I really like this fight. Alexander Hernandez is going to be fighting at UFC 249. His opponent will be Islam Makhachev. These are lightweights. I think it's a quality matchup. I think the pay-per-views have not been as deep and as stacked as the way we ended 2019. So the fact that 248 is a step up from 247 and 249 appears to be a step up from 248, I'm liking it. I'm really hoping that what Zabit said was true, that he'll also be at UFC 249. And the only one that seems to be left out is Brian Ortega. Now you got yourself a pay-per-view in Brooklyn, New York. You know what I mean? Because they charge a lot of money. It's not?
I don't think so. We'll see. But
what does Mike Bond know?
I'll speak as freely as I can here, but I think they still want to do that Ortega Korean Zombie fight. I think that's what they're still
hoping
for.
He said he was hoping for a top five guy, though. In process of elimination, I think that's all that was left. Gaethje?
That's a different way.
Oh, sorry.
I think, and I would say this is premature at this point, not even close to finalize, but I heard Yair Rodriguez's name tossed around, and that's a fight, of course, we've had booked
yeah.
before, and that's the one I think we all want to see.
Yeah.
You know, we were supposed to have that. Those guys have had their back and forth. Again, quite premature, so no one, you know, quote me or report anything specific on this, but that's the fight to me, looking at the rankings, looking at who's available, that makes the most sense for 45.
Oh, I'd be into that one, man. I would be into that one. All right, we're going to get on out of here. Let's plug our social media. Mike Bond MMA across all platforms, Mike? Or?
Yes, sir.
All right, and what you got going on next after Vegas? What's the next event you're covering? You still doing Rolling Stone?
Here and there. They've dialed back a lot on their sports coverage in general. You know, they kind of, since they were purchased by a new company, I think about like 18 months ago, they're trying to focus on, you know, the Rolling Stone you guys probably grew up with, the more traditional, you know, music, stuff like that. So it's all MMA junkie for me, baby.
What about the Raptors? They're going to be on the opposite side of the Lakers in the finals this year?
Man, maybe if Giannis gets hurt.
At least he's honest. How about you, Goes? At the Goes MMA, or excuse me, at the Goes for Instagram and Twitter. And what are you looking forward to this week?
I'm looking forward to getting the spinning back click tomorrow, recording that and
some fun
and
topics up
getting
there.
To see all the junkies.
Yeah, check out our franchises.
Maybe share that what we got click. Going on this week in terms of the junkie stuff.
Yeah, we got spinning back click. We got the off guard series and the rankings report. Check that out, folks. It's also on YouTube and it's also on our website. And what Mike is alluding to is we're having an MMA junkie summit where all the writers, videographers, editors, and even some of the higher bosses are in town for 2 days. And we're just going to have, like, workshops, exchange ideas, grow together. I don't know.
Big stuff coming in 2020.
Yeah. So I think that's a good thing. I really applaud the higher-ups for getting that together. It's all going to happen here in the MMA Junkie Radio studio. And then, of course, as the week progresses, we get close to UFC 248, which is what we'll talk about when we come back on Wednesday. So, folks, thanks for your time, as always. Thanks for your support. We are going to bounce on out of here. Thanks, Mike Bond, for co-hosting.
Thanks for having me.
Folks, go out there and be a champion.